And friends, let us unite in prayer. Almighty and eternal Father, as again we assemble in thy presence to worship you in spirit and in truth, pray that you shall grant unto our consciousness the full awareness of our relationship as thy children to the mighty power and essence of thy being, and to that power which resides in thy household, for which they shall accomplish the purposes for which you have placed them in the earth. Cause us to recognize our relationship with the institutions which you have established for carrying forward the purposes of thy will, the magnitude and the splendor of thy kingdom as it shall be revealed, the mighty impact of thy grace. We might also recognize that throughout the course of the relationship of thee with thy children in the earth, that you have been the power that has sustained them, that has shielded them and hath guided them from all their enemies. And thus, our Father, as we have arrived in this period in which we pass through the turbulence of this hour, but in the forces of darkness view us as a necessity to be removed. And so, our Father, again we place our trust in thee, knowing that we are possessors of a sure covenant and of eternal promises that cannot be destroyed, recognizing by the revelation of thy Spirit the identity of thy household and of thy people, and knowing that what you have purposed to do shall be brought to pass, we can lift up our voices in praise and we can look forward with vision and with certainty to apply ourselves to the things that still must be done. So we commit ourselves to thy hand, saying, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Then we ask it. Amen. Returning this afternoon, the subject, Yahweh, our defense. Realization that if ever there were a period in human history where the forces of darkness were seeking to destroy the light, it is in our day. And it is in realization that these forces operate out of a condition which is entirely different than that which is normal to you and to your background. I recently addressed a group of young men, each one interested in the welfare of his nation, each one interested and concerned in his family and its future, but having been subject to the influences that have moved out of the areas of darkness, there is a confused pattern. Their expectancies and their hopes have been gradually transferred in our time to processes that they were told were going to make the world the ideal place, and that the solutions of these problems would come by permitting the experienced and the trained leadership, each within its field, to continue the development which they were assured was the inevitable one for our day. Individually talking to these men, I discovered that they did not feel this security when they considered the situations in the earth one at a time, but when they looked at the conditions and felt the impact upon their nation and upon their families of things that were happening in the earth. But when they listened to television and to radio, to the voices of government and to the voices that sometimes seemed to hold the pulpit, they were being told that they were antisocial if they did not consider that the processes were all working out in accordance with the things that were best for earth. And when they were reasoning in their minds concerning what these things were, they were being forced to gradually accept that the world must become an integrated society of all religions and philosophies and nations, and that when thus this had been accomplished, that their great security would be in the union of men and of nations. It's quite impossible for there to exist such a development in our time of united nations or security or development for the peoples of earth by this process. First, because there can exist no united nations when a deep rift exists among the nations of earth on the basic foundations of both their philosophies and their concepts, their viewpoint and their desires for the earth. The great nations of God's kingdom today are interested in establishing that kingdom over all the earth. This is our destiny. We have been told to ask for the heathen for our inheritance, and the uttermost parts of the earth for our possession. In our time, we discover that the design also of the Red Revolution is the conquest of the earth. Their design is the creation of a Soviet socialist state over all the world. They do not seek to capture the earth to set men free. They seek to enslave them as the servants of a state in which their super bureaucracy rules with absolute power. They would extend at the same time promises which they do not intend to fulfill. They would seek to woo people with the vision of a utopian age which they never intend to develop. But out of the background of their life and living, we catch a little of the pattern of their way of life. But the thing which is the enigma in our time is here in our own nation, that in high positions of government, in areas of religious operation, within structures of churches and educational institutions, there is an assent and an instruction which is being given unto the peoples of the nation that the course of eventually forming and uniting with all peoples is going to solve these problems. And that if we adhere to the concepts which are basically our inheritance of the establishment of God's kingdom, which of course calls for the rule of righteous law and the administration of a people that recognize the standards of morality and ethics because they are the children of the Father, and because they respect this as having coming forth from His presence, that this in its very essence is not the way, because there are many fathers and there are many gods and there are many philosophies, and so therefore we must bring them all together if we are to accomplish a successful solution to the world's problem. Now there is no question that there's a diametric opposite here, because the children of the kingdom can have no other God before them. Hear, O Israel, Yahweh thy El is one Lord. There are not many, nor is there any instruction in His word that we are to agree very quickly with the powers of darkness, or that we are to be influenced by their philosophies. There is a diametric opposite condition existing in the capacities of intellect and understanding between the Adamic race and the peoples of the world into which you and I find ourselves by occupancy and by divine intent. We're living in a world in which the distinguishing qualities that mark the difference between you and the races round about have been the background of origin and the capacities that exist within you and why you are here. We have referred to the past, to the fact that it was by the grace of God that He planted His own household in the earth, His own offspring, the Adamic man, and that in him was the holy seed that Ezra the prophet talks about. In him and in that posterity, when non-mongrelized and unpolluted, the highest wavelength of spiritual vision is developed. There can be no question that those that pause to survey the world self-evidently can divide the world as our enemies are dividing them all the time. In a very recent conference still seeking to stir up Asia to even more added hatred against the Western world, they were again told that the Western world were have-nations and that we had defrauded the world of their proper share of the things that we have. They classified themselves under this instance as the have-not nations, and cited they were have-not nations apparently by the very existence of we who were the haves in the midst of the earth. By this very process, they demonstrate that there is something lacking inside the revolution that they are a part of, and the forces of darkness admit that there is a quality they do not have, for the difference between a have-nation and a have-not nation is in its ability to develop and to create and to possess and to make in every field of its endeavor, that this process must come with idea, and idea must come with vision, for vision is that process in which there is transferred to the thinking intelligence of a man ideas which take form and which as they are developed are the answer to the things he seeks and would desire to know. The assurances that seek and ye shall find, knock and it shall be opened unto you, are strangely the spiritual force which relates to you and to your race. There is a difference today between the children of light and the children of darkness. This is not a play on words. It was not merely a process of describing those that were for and those that were against by imputing to them these capacities. We have been assured in many of the instances of revelation of the strange phenomena of the revelation of our God. We turn throughout the whole pattern of the Old Testament and it declares things concerning His nature. And the New Testament unveiled this first from His ministry and then from the revelation of things which he instructed his disciples to know. We know that our God is a God of light, and we know that this light is one of the most powerful forces that exists in his universe. By it he holds all things together, with it all things are synthesized, and in its wavelengths and fields of energy come the substances that we have broken down in the very electrons and protons that make up the atoms, which we take apart today with the catastrophe that follows. The universe is organized by the mind and the intellect of our Father. And when we will not take the time to go through all the patterns which this would prepare for us to recognize, but this we would call to your attention. That the Eternal, who established you in the earth as his children, gave a capacity to you which existed when you were with him before the world was framed. In the days that were brought back to the remembrances of Job, to the things which we beheld in the beginnings, and to those experiences which belonged unto us, that we were the children of his Spirit. We were begotten by the God of the universe. We were begotten in a field of light. That's why in the great mystery of the teachings of the Apostle Paul, he tells us that there is a physical body and there is a celestial body. He tells us the difference between these two bodies is like the difference between the brilliancy of the sun, moon, and stars. One star differs from another in its brilliancy. For the celestial body is a body of light, begotten out of the very essence of God's own Spirit. It's a reality. It abides with you. You have a celestial body. You have a physical body. And the entity of your soul consciousness that resides in either field or can have conscious contact with the celestial consciousness or the brain of the physical body marks the experience, which is your living experience, the continuity of your existence. You're in a physical body. You're responding to the senses. With them you see, you hear, you touch, you taste, you handle. This is quite evidently so. And you are in the world, but you are not by origin out of it. You have come into it by purpose. You are children of light and you are children of spirit. And the greatest and most powerful force in the universe is that essence of light and that essence of spirit. Therefore, because you are the children of light and you are the children of spirit, the wavelength of your celestial consciousness can draw every knowledge and every intent that is in the heart of the Father, who is a God of light. However, your Father was capable of being embodied in earth, and this he demonstrated, as Paul told us in Hebrews, that since the children of God were now in bodies of flesh, he himself took a part of the same. But in this capacity of thinking the thoughts of God, it requires that the soul consciousness, being cognizant of these facts, turn to the light and draw out of its guidance and out of its wisdom the things which can be brought back to its remembrance that it has known from the beginning, and the things which in the purposes of the Father are earthward related, since you are now earthward existent and must therefore be guided by Spirit for that leadership. There is no doubt that God sent your race here to subdue all darkness, to rule from one end of the earth to the other, to establish that reign with righteousness and truth. But as you expand, you do not expand to enslave men, you expand to set them free. You discover and create in the thinking of men the value of the individual and of the personality. Your societies, as they develop, enrich themselves with the value of the personality of the individual. The revelation of God himself, when he talks about the single individual, creates the vision of the vastness of his value even to the mind of God. He refers to you as the sheep of his pasture. And when he talks about the sheep of his pasture, though he says, thou art my children, my household, my sons, my daughters, he said, if I had one sheep out in the pasture and I didn't know where he had wandered to, one lost sheep, I would search for that sheep until I found him. No greater value can be evaluated in the single individual of God's household that the most powerful incarnate force of revelation could say that I, the Almighty God, would search for one that was out of adjustment, one lost sheep until I found him. This sense of values, this vision of the created values of the Most High as it relates to his household is very important. The collectivist forces today which are seeking to overthrow the structure of Christian society and eventually erase it from the patterns of life do not care anything about the value of an individual. They would count expendable all the masses of whole nations to accomplish their single objective. I think one of the best evidences of the fact that there is no value upon life or upon the human soul can be seemingly expressed best by the attitude 2 years ago of the Red Revolution in China. Here they were talking to the Chinese echelons of activity, from the youth groups to the factories, and prepared them for a period of about a year, in which they said that one of the great problems of the state are people who become aged, and they cannot contribute anything, and they haven't the energies and the labors they formerly had, and therefore, when they cease to be contributors, they become parasites upon the state. And the best thing the state can do is utterly eliminate these people. And therefore, they suggested and actually were able, under the brainwashing and under the influences and under the powers of world communism and its vision of darkness, that the peoples of China, who long revered their ancestors and had always given a primary place in their homes to the aged and always listened to the advice of the old folks, permitted the Red Revolution to gather up 1,800,000 people past 80 years of age and liquidate them in one political move. Whenever anyone talks to me about the agrarian revolution and the progress which is made in China, even out of pagan China, even out of an area in which four basic religions of paganism, including Buddhism, operate, this was a degeneracy. This was even lower than their background. And whereas we can say today that they lack the vision and they lack the light, they could never accomplish a thing like this in these United States, we well recognize the only reason why they could never accomplish this in these United States are because of the people that dwell here. But I point out to you that even among their own and among the areas in which they gain the strength of their empire, they would demonstrate they have no value of life or of the person. That would wipe out anything that was before them that they decided they wanted to destroy. It also shows that in the catalyst of this darkness that they are able to hold and sway masses of people by the millions who stand placidly by and do nothing about such a situation. And even in one of the strangest of the paradoxes, when their editors were picked up and those that constituted the short little flash of life that appeared for a few days among their editors, who had been told by the Comintern's inside of the Soviet program extending now into China from General Mao and Zhao Enlai, that they wanted everybody to express themselves with perfect freedom, to criticize any error that existed in the state, to speak out openly against anything with which they disagreed, that from now on full freedom of expression was going to exist in the Soviet state. And about 27 newspaper editors and a great number of public speakers and others came to life suddenly inside of China, and they published their criticism and they extended their opposition. And so they were permitted to do this for exactly 30 days. Then the system picked up the editors and picked up the speakers and had a great public execution and sold tickets to all the rest of the people to come and see it. And strangely enough, their leaders, their heroes, their champions, and they who were trying to express the great rumble that was coming underground were to be executed on a given day. And so the tickets were actually sold by the state to the torture and the execution, and these people with a strange, implacable attitude came to see this, and in the course of it a great rainstorm started to fall upon them, and they then were very, very indignant and wanted their money back. A postponement. You can't understand anything like that because that's not a part of your soul. It's so utterly removed from the Western world. It's so completely hard for you to understand. But let me tell you, this is the kind of soulishness that they would unite you with when they talk about United Nations. This is what they would join you with when they tell you about the great progress and expression that is coming forth out of Asia and out of these areas, and how this is one world and we must be fused with it. It is a rather unique thing, then, that we cannot unite and never will be able to unite the powers of darkness with the powers of light. Someone said the world can never be united. The only way the world could ever be united would be by the kingship of the Most High God. It could only be united when the power of His Spirit had changed, transformed, and reorganized the thinking of every individual on the face of the earth. I want you to know that you're predicated to accept no other solution other than the enforcement of law over those that would destroy, because there is no other solution as far as the ultimate future is concerned. You, as the children of the kingdom, therefore, know that your greatest power and your greatest inheritance lies in your affinity to it. I have discovered that there are a great number of people who subconsciously draw vision without realizing its source. They've inherited a great cultural wave from their mothers and from their forefathers. They are a part of a society in which the very light and aura of all those that are aware, plus those that are not, make one catalyzation, because the spirit within them is still a spirit of light. And because of this is one of the great secrets for the knowledge and the know-how that is immediately applied in your society to everything that you search for. And as the idea comes in every range. Someone said, how far-reaching is this? It doesn't make any difference whether the technician is working in the field of biology or whether he's working in the areas of agriculture. Whether the technician is working in the field of government and is seeking guidance for how to improve it or how it should be established. Whether it is the clergy, which all... know that they want you to know. You are the have nations because of the affinity of your spirit with the Father. You are the have nations because of the application of knowledge. The processes today that are being suggested for the development of the world are not the processes of God's kingdom. You, strangely, today have influences that are against Christ and against your nation, surrounding our president to a very disturbing degree. And within this, we see the great concepts that are the program of the kingdom being subordinated to substitutes. It's not just the dispersal of wealth or the dispersal of possessions or the scattering of things that you've created that helps the world. That does not help the world. If you make the entire world becoming dependent upon your creative abilities to supply them at the extent of tremendous taxation upon the citizens of this nation, you then take the blessings of your society and you penalize it in order to scatter, as these do-gooders would tell us, these benefits over the world. And instead of doing that, you take away from them even the application of vision and of initiative which they require to do something for themselves. If you put the whole world on the WPA, you haven't given them any blessings. You have taken away the blessing that belongs to initiative and vision, which stands as a continuing example of proper application of knowledge, wisdom, and spiritual law. There is one thing that you cannot do. Now, this is where I interject something in here. Some may blush and some say we should discuss this. You cannot make a Negro out of a white man. You can't, and you can't make a white man out of a Negro. You cannot make a white man out of a Chinaman. You cannot change people because of who they are and what they are as far as their capacities and their abilities. They have their limitations. They have a different source of knowledge. They have a different wavelength of vision and of understanding. There exist people in this world who are a mutation. These mutations create the greatest catastrophes of our time. The rebellion of Lucifer and the great revolutions and wars and the antiquities of ancient times that changed the conditions of whole planets and eventually ended after the victories of Michael over Lucifer, with Luciferian forces being defeated and brought to earth. This discovery you find both confirmed in the 12th chapter of Revelations and other areas of applied study here and in other sacred writings. You'll discover that the Luciferian forces started to intermingle with the peoples of earth and brought in his defeat some of those he'd taken from other parts of the universe. These mutations were unassimilatable, and these who had been fathered by forces out of adjustment with God, out of the patterns of hatred, brought a mutation and species in the earth that are absolutely unassimilatable anywhere in the world. You can say, what can be done for these people? You know, Jesus found a great power of evil had swept in to control the temple in his time. And he, with that omniscience that belonged to incarnate deity, knew that these who were the problems of his day were not who they claimed to be, and more than that, he knew their origins. Having the omniscience to know that, he knew that some of them were the descendants of Canaanites and others were Hittites that had come in and had absorbed this place in order to carry out their design for mastery. And when Jesus identified them, he knew that some of them were literally of their father Lucifer, and said so. He said, therefore, you cannot understand what I say because you cannot hear my speech. There was a deep related truth that many people do not know, that except a spirit is in affinity with the Father and vibrates at the same existing wavelengths, the concepts of spiritual vision or the mind of God are not erected in their seat of consciousness, because like the locking in of the television tube to the wavelength of from which that picture has left the station, so also is this true in spiritual capacity. The spirit which has proceeded forth from him can be locked in upon the things which emanate from his consciousness. And therefore, it has been important, and was an important thing in the plan of God, that in putting your race into the earth, your race was the only race that could transmit the concepts of God and become a light unto the world to do the will which God had established. You couldn't turn this job over to Africa. You couldn't turn this job over to India. You couldn't turn it over to China. There have been thousands upon thousands of years of longer existence of these races in the earth than yours. But you came out of the presence of the Father, and the entry into the Adamic races of you that have existed with the Father before the world was framed was his purpose. This was the way he was bringing you in. And you, he called the children of light. Jesus reconfirmed this when he said, ye are the light of the world. He said, therefore, I don't want you to hide this. You know, a lot of people think that we as a race and as a people should now step back and hide our faith and the things we stand for, and that this is an embarrassing thing, they say, when people have other different objectives, ideas, and philosophies for us to push ours forward. I talked to one young man and said, Dr. Swift, I agree that I would like to see the things you say come to pass, but wouldn't it be rather selfish if we were to try to push our way forward? No, that's what the world wants you to think. That's what the powers of darkness are trying to sell you on today. They're trying to sell you on the necessity of the expression of all other religions, philosophies, and ways of life, and they're asking you to subordinate yours and retire in the face of this, and they know they've got you outnumbered 6-1, that you're only 1/6 of the world's population if every white man on the face of the earth stood solidly together in proclamation of his faith. But they also know something that I can tell you this afternoon is very, very important. You have never beheld a blackness, a darkness of the dark, that was so opaque in its darkness that a ray of light couldn't shine through it. You have never known a darkness that the modern technician, assembling the various types of illumination equipment which we have created with the expansion of knowledge in the fields of the use of electricity and of electronic fields, and out of this, from the concepts of Edison and his discoveries to the vast industries which this is a part of, we can produce lights that men cannot stand. In fact, we've got a light now that is so great and so bright and has such intensities of penetration that it can be even deadly for many miles. But the thing is that there is no darkness that we have not been able to dispel. If we have shadows, there's something that casts it, but we can create such a light. Suppose I tell you, therefore, that there is predicated in this a certain assurance of victory. For there are people today whose inner being is not composed as your celestial being of light is composed, of the light which is the light of God, or the wavelength of its radiancy. God's purpose in its grace has a plan also for that. But I tell you that this exists and exists in your society. There is an emanation which is an aura of darkness. Such an aura of darkness moves out from them and may not be visible to you and to your eye, though there are times when under the gift of God's discernment, which he bestows upon those that have sought it, they some kind can see the gray and darkening emanation as though a black halo were around certain forces. This sometimes one can behold. I can tell you that the workers of darkness have a black halo that move around in your society. I can tell you that you who are the children of light have an emanation of that light. It not only is an effulgence that emanates off of the physical body in which that spirit is resident, but it also is an effulgence out of that spirit that catalyzes with every kindred spirit that you come in contact with. This is one of the great principles with which the worship of the church was established when you were told to not leave off the assembling of yourselves together. For that assembly, tuning its mind to the consciousness of God's spirit, catalyzes a range of light and glory, Shekinah spreading, until that aura strengthens and empowers and sends forth the worshiper stronger than he was when he entered, and the light, which is his own aura, charged more radiant than when he came in. And still you may say, I do not see it. Maybe you do not see it with the wavelength of the eye, but it's a spiritual force and impact, which is a part of the laws of spiritual science that exist inside of the purposes of the Most High. Now I tell you that there is a light or vibration which is of darkness that moves out of those forces which are dark. I can understand why we get presidents that get lost on the road, because they've surrounded themselves with the wrong kind of people. If you don't think that's important, I tell you it is. If you pick 126 men, make them your advisors, and 77 of them hate Jesus Christ in his name, and also are bent towards the sociological philosophies that their own society has created, namely the revolution of communism and socialism, even though they don't give lip service to it, by identity, I tell you that that wavelength in itself is enough to black out any concept or vision that would move in the individual that was thus surrounded and outnumbered. Especially if he was not actively seeking the guidance of spirit that his own vision might be attuned. That's the reason why we have watched the things that have happened on high levels. And someone said to me the other day, who had just returned from Washington, Dr. Swift, he said, I have worked, as you know, well in this field. And he said, I've talked to and have been friendly with a great number of our legislators and senators. And almost every one of these men know that there are things that are wrong and there are vital changes that must be made, and that we've got to return to the great principles of our founding fathers and reestablish the freedom of the individual and eschew the collectivism and all the things that in collectivist federalism on the increase are endangering us. And these men are disturbed about the fifth column that has already penetrated the branches of our nation, in our State Department, in our Foreign Service, in our military. There isn't any doubt about traitors and treason, and the design of the enemy who wants to rule the world is already infiltrated with his installations of evil, our very branches of society. And we have had men raised up that some didn't like the forcefulness with which they moved, but they were raised up for their purpose. We've had our Senator McCarthy's in our Rankins, and we've had others that continue to try to do the same job, though I would to God that every one of these fighters were still in Washington doing the task for which they were raised up. And he said, the thing that is startling to me is that here are congressmen and senators, here are men in various branches of investigation and security, here are them that when you talk about it, they know this story. If I were to tell you and to spend the time of this afternoon talking about the great design of the powers of darkness to destroy America and the forces of Antichrist to wipe us out and to make this a dark world of socialist communism, and I were to go into its details, many of you are students of this revolution. You have studied it. You understand. The strange thing is that a great number of these men in Washington and a great number of your elected representatives have come face to face with its reality. And they've heard the investigation here and the testimony there. And they also, right down inside, they know that this is the picture. Now the thing he says, the amazing thing he says is, why don't they move? Why don't they stand up and start impeaching? Why don't they call for the elimination? Why don't they say, let's get these rascals out of the State Department if we have to fire the Secretary of State himself? I said, well, that's the whole procedure requires transition and change. And I said, we've got to get every rascal out. Now you say, why don't they do it? I'll tell you why. Because in this great capital city of our nation, we have it packed and filled with a force that doesn't vibrate to the wavelength of our race. And there is a lethargy that is born out of this destructive impact, which keeps good men waiting for somebody else to do it. But I also have talked with them. They said, Dr. Swift, see how many you can get to go, and when somebody's ready to go, I'll follow them. No wonder we can say God alone has the answer for this when he said, I'm going to raise up principal men. For if ever we needed leadership, it's today. You know, all it would take would be a few on fire leaders for God moving through our society at the level of statesmanship in the political life of our nation, and we can transform America in a day. Now there is no doubt in my mind that God is going to stimulate and create just this kind of situation. What is it? You know what the opaque factor was? It was the amount of darkness around sons and daughters of God that have not turned on the light.
They have the light, but they are not aware of its power. I'm not just talking about the light of knowledge concerning what's wrong. They know what's wrong, but they haven't felt the light of their sonship in the way that they must apply it to do the mighty job that must be done in our time.
I would point to the words of Jesus to show you how the very thing which we are discussing is related to this mystery. Jesus said, "The light of your body is the eye, and if thy eye be single, thy whole body be full of light." That means that if the eye of the spirit and the eye of the soul and the eye of the physical body are synchronized, thy body be filled with light. More than that, therefore, he said, that if the eye be evil, this is the thinking area that sets up the image of purpose in the consciousness of the individual. If thy eye be evil, therefore thy body is full of darkness. Now Jesus said, if therefore the vibration that comes out of thee is darkness, how great is that darkness? And I tell you that we have today among the enemies of Christ and among the unassimilatable offspring of darkness people whose vibration is darkness. And except this be understood and the whole armor of God has been put on to combat this darkness, they are held in an area of passive resistance but with no action taken. Now therefore, I want you to know this about our Father. We turn over to 1 John, and here 1 John makes this declaration in the chapter 1 John and in the 5th verse, having just said, "I write unto you these things that your joy may be full," that you might understand and you might know. "This then is the message which we have heard from him and declare unto you, that Yahweh is light and in him there is no darkness at all." This is the fundamental principle that you must understand, that your joy may be full. There is in him only light. And also, if we walk in the light as he is in the light, not only do we have fellowship one with another, but we don't deceive ourselves. We're set absolutely free. Again, we read these words, "And a new commandment I write unto you, which thing is true in him and in you," because the darkness is going to be passed and true light now shines. "I write this thing to you," John said, "because what's true of him is true of you. What's true of God is true of you who are his offspring. There's no solution to the world outside of the offspring of God. There's no solution to the world outside of the kingdom of God. So no other race and no other people can bring it to pass." That's why I tell you that there is a great fear today on the part of your enemies that America is going to come to a spiritual awakening of its racial self-respect, of its divine responsibility, and a firm affidavit of every phase of its Christian faith. Do you know why they're worried about that? They're worried that as this comes on and the light comes on, both to their works and their activities, that this isn't going to be the safest place for them to be. And so I looked at a book just the other day that was brought out by the enemies of Christianity and written by the Anti-Defamation League of the Nigh Brith, and they were talking about the fact that everywhere that they discovered that people, when asked questions, and they went out and took a poll about themselves. Now, I tell you, if you want to find out what people think, and don't be surprised, you go out and ask everybody what they think, and you may find that some of them will tell you. They started talking about themselves, and they wanted to know what people thought of them, and they'd ask us question about the Jews, and that question about the Jews, and they said that about 50% of the people said no, but. And now they said this "but" was an evidence that they didn't like us. And in this instance, they discovered that there were 31% of the nation that said they didn't like them and didn't care whether anybody knew it or not. This is their evaluation from their polls. So they ask the question, why don't they like us? And then they end up by suggesting that because there's a difference, and that their objectives are so far beyond our objectives that we can't accept their objectives for the world, the earth, and therefore we don't like them, and therefore they just have to put that down for that. But they must, by legislation, by creating a new complete atmosphere in public relations, make all the world like them, because of the wavelengths of the tremendous impact of their just telling everybody that they're brothers. Now, I want you to know that I'm not here this afternoon to tell you that you're the brother of the Jew,
or that you're the brother of the Asiatic, or that you're the brother of the Negro. I'm here to tell you that you are the only light of the world through your Father that can accomplish the objectives of God's kingdom, and that their best interests are going to be served when that light shines in their darkness, whether they understand it or not. I turn for one moment to add to this the evidences which are quite clear here. Often we have used this passage in the Scripture concerning the whole violation of the processes of divine law. Here in the 6th chapter of 2 Corinthians, God said, "Be not unequally yoked together, for what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness, and what communion hath light with darkness?" God doesn't want integration, He wants segregation. He wants His kingdom segregated so it can fulfill its ministry. What fellowship hath the light with the darkness? He's not just talking about their color. He's talking about the wavelength that comes out of them. He's talking about this wavelength, that if this ought to be of darkness, then, my friends, it has no illumination that it can guide with. Now, therefore, what communion hath the light with the darkness? I would pause to call your attention to the 4th chapter of 2 Corinthians. In the 6th verse we read, "For God, who commands the light to shine out even unto the darkness, shined in our hearts, and He hath given us the light of the knowledge of the glory of Yahweh," which was in the face of Jesus Christ. This is historic, it's symbolic, it's spiritual. But in this illumination that shines in your heart, the seat of your consciousness, God hath given us the light of the knowledge of the glory. Now, when I say light of the knowledge of the glory, He has given us the know-how to be illuminated with power and spiritual illumination, as was Christ. You say, is this what He means? Now listen to the next text. "For we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellency of the power of God shall be upon us, not of the flesh, but of the Spirit," but here. We have the excellency of this treasure in these earthen vessels. The only thing I want to do is quicken to your consciousness the realization of the unlimited power of the sons and daughters of God, for which purpose God Himself came into our presence and made the declaration in the Gospel of John, in the opening declaration, when it said that He was the Logos, He was the light that lighted every Adamite that came into the world. He therefore makes this declaration that He came to them who, as the sons of God, were the sons of God, not by the will of man, not by the will of flesh, but by the will of the Father. He came to empower you as mighty sons. I'm not worried about the outcome. I have no feeling of defeat this afternoon. I am very much aware that the great need must be the awakening that shall catalyze the light of God's children across the nation. The reason why I have no defeatism is because I have the whole story. I have the end of this book. I know that God is going to turn on the light. He's going to illuminate every one of His sons. I know that the light is going to dispel the darkness. I know that light is going to shine across your nation like the Shekinah glory of God once hovered over you in the days of your migrations. I know that the enemy is not going to have to be just put out by being deported, though it's a good way to start. Deport them for dual allegiance. Let them go down to Palestine where they send their money. Let them go down, my friends, or to any other area of the earth that they wish to go to, but deport them for dual allegiance when they vote in their elections and still stay in your country. After all, remember, almost all these people through Histadrut actually vote in Palestinian elections right here, right now. But I only point this out because they're a part of this thing in its opposition. They identify themselves to that opposition. But just remember that when the glory of God starts to shine forth, when that light makes itself manifest, when suddenly you speak up and say, "We're not going to be moved," when suddenly you say, "This is a Christian nation, we're the majority, we're going to elect Christians," when you speak up as senators and congressmen and say, "There's going to be no confirmation of a socialist or a fifth columnist to any branch of departmental government. There's not going to be an appointment that we'll approve. There's not going to be one that we'll not impeach." When that starts to move, my friends, you know what's going to happen? Every boat in America that's got shipping room is going to be taking on passengers booking passage to leave America. When the light comes, the darkness will flee. You say, why? Because the darkness knows they can't stand the light. The light dispels the darkness. They know that their way of darkness cannot stand the light, so turn on the light and watch it go.
I talked to a school teacher who has been half wound up in telling the story of this socialist one world that they've been building, and personally is now aware that that's the wrong thing, and the thing he should be teaching is white sovereignty and white administration and Christian civilization. Instead of talking about United Nationsism, he should once more support colonialism, and he knows that. That all the progress the world's ever made came out of colonialism of Christian nations. He understands that. Now he said, I'm torn between two opinions. When I listen to this side, it sounds plausible, and when I listen to the other, I know this is the way I'd like it, and I wished everybody would agree with me. He'd like to see it the way God outlined it, because it's his nature. He'd like to teach it if everybody'd agree with him, but he has just lacked that spiritual catalyst of a life that would make him willing to say, I will declare this if I stand alone. I know a few school teachers like that. But how can you get the light across to the students when those that have the light would like to proclaim it if everybody would agree with them? Christianity, my friends, if the disciples had taken this attitude, would still be back in Palestine, never having advanced, and probably completely liquidated by their enemies long before this. Someone said, who wants to be a martyr? You have marched with martyrdom in all the history of your development. Nobody wants to be martyred, and you don't have to accept martyrdom today because you're strong enough to have victory. But you're going to have to start moving in the areas of its development. I want you to know that it is this light of God that is in you, which not only possesses a wavelength that you can feel. As I told you, sometimes with discernment you can see the order of darkness, but you feel it. You feel yourself automatically pushed away from it. Did you know one of the greatest possessions you can have and the one gift that you should ask God for and everybody should be applying? And this, I think, God's been bestowing upon the peoples that have sought the truth more than almost any other factor. That's the gift of discernment. You need it when you read a newspaper. You need it when you look at a magazine. It doesn't make any difference how they've honeyed up these phrases. If it sparks the program of the enemy, if it's the processes of collectivism and the destruction of the individual, if it's an attempt to eliminate the God-given spiritual heritage of a society, you have automatically, you should sense it. I know that this is true with most of you. You read the magazine, you read the newspaper, and as you go down its lines, automatically you're for or against, and waves of emotion rise and fall as you read that newspaper. That's a sign of the affinity of your spirit with that of your Father. And the thing which is of God and of righteousness and law you agree with, and the other force just moves you back. And so even as you read and as you see and as you touch it, the wavelength of the writer can be felt even from the printer's ink. And I tell you then that the power of discernment is there. They also can discern you. Jesus made this quite clear. He said, you know, if I be lifted up, I draw all men unto me. Adamites, humans, peoples of spirit. At the same time, he didn't draw his enemies who sought to kill him. They were repulsed by him. Why? Because there was a difference between the light and the darkness, and the darkness bounced away from the light. But I want you to know that the light had affinity, was drawn to it. This is also the same spiritual catalyst that you possess. And I want you to know that in the nation where you are the majority, you better let that light so move, and you better let that affidavit of its faith so a part of your life be constantly present with you that you have earned and achieved that part of victory to which you were capable. I have many friends who love America and love the great spiritual truths with all the deepness and fervor they can, to the point of not sacrificing any of their personal feeling of embarrassment by stating the truth even when they're in the presence of an opposition, because it might not pay off. So what do you mean by that? I mean fine people, good people, that are not ashamed of everything they stand for and believe when they're with you, or whether they're a group of their friends. But they have let the world make them feel embarrassed because they are the children of God and they're here to do a great task. They let themselves feel embarrassed about expressing this where there's opposition. Let me tell you, the best way to scatter this opposition and retake the heritage is to proclaim the truth that you are a part of everywhere. God will give you all the processes to do this thing right. But don't, my friends, admit to yourself that you're just a little bit conquered because you didn't want to be embarrassed by taking a stand where you were outnumbered. Let me tell you, my friends, the time is soon coming when this nation shall bask in the light, and there shall not remain a Canaanite in the house of the Lord. I can tell you a little bit about one pattern of defense
I would take you for a moment back into the words of David the psalmist. One thing I like about David, irrespective of his human errors, the Spirit had illuminated in this man the great concepts of God's mastery, His sovereignty, His care, and His determination for His people. The 7th chapter of the book of Psalms, David lifts up his voice and says, "My defense is of Yahweh, which saveth the upright in heart." We turn over again in the 31st Psalm, and again David said, "Thou, therefore, bow down thine ear to deliver me, O Yahweh. Be thou the strong rock, the house of defense to save me. Thou art my rock, my fortress. Therefore, for thy name's sake, guide me." We turn again to the words of the psalmist, and he speaks, and this he declares in the 59th Psalm, "O Yahweh, thou shalt laugh at them, thou shalt hold the heathen that are against me in derision. Because of the strength of the heathen, I now wait for thee, O Yahweh, my defense." I turn again as the psalmist continues to bring forth his revelation of the power of the spiritual life and presence of the Most High. And in the 89th Psalm he said, "For Yahweh is our defense, and the Holy One of Israel is our King." From here we go again in the psalmist's concept of the mighty enveloping power of the light and the glory of the Most High. And he declares again, "For the Lord reigneth, He is our defense, He is a fortress unto us." 94th Psalm, 22nd verse, "And the Lord is my defense, and Yahweh is the rock of my refuge." Now I want you to turn for one closing thought to the 4th chapter of the book of Isaiah. And here we see God looking down upon you, the mountain of His kingdom established in the earth, the people of the true Zion of God. He looks down and declares that every one of you and every dweller in this new world order of which you are a part shall be holy. Someone says, "What do you mean by that?" It means the enveloping glory and the light of the Spirit shall so fill the soul that the thinking concepts of your society shall be constructive and good and powerful. He therefore says that this shall be, that every one of your whole new world order and your whole society shall be holy, and it shall be a living Jerusalem, a new order. And the Most High says, "Therefore Yahweh shall create upon every dwelling place in all my nations, and upon all the assemblies of my people, a glowing illumination of glory that shall be a cloud of effulgent glory by day, and a radiant effulgent light of majesty by night. And upon all my people shall be a mighty light of glory of the Most High for a defense." Someone says, "A defense?" Yes, for a defense. I'm going to tell you, if that light were to come on, you're going to watch the enemy flee from you. You're going to see them empty your land. They're going to be uncomfortable. You know, the light will so shoot through the darkness that the darkness will hide under the rocks and the mountains, if necessary, to keep out of the light. They'll hunt the caverns of the earth. Remember the words that is referred to concerning the presence of Christ. If Christ were to step back into human affairs, if He were to come in with the mighty fleets of space or to stand in the midst of earth, it tells you that His enemies would try to hide in the caves. Why? Because they can't stand the light. It says they would flee from the light of His presence. The thing that we are waiting for in earth is the light so to shine out of the children of His kingdom that they flee the light of Your presence and the power of that word. The light that is in you is like that light which is in Him. And you are being changed from one wavelength of illumination unto another until the very essence of the truth that you know shall become like a Shekinah defense round about you. And God said, "In all these areas, they that would move against you to destroy, I will be like a wall of light or fire, effulgent radiation round about them, and I shall protect them." Now, we cannot always see these things if they are spiritual wavelengths of law. But I am assured that the Father of the Covenant is now putting His light around His people. That's why, my friends, the voices of truth can proclaim what they do. That's why God is lifting up that declaration, and the enemy, with all of their evil, with all their powers of assassination, with all their attempt to destroy, they cannot raise up their hand against God's anointed. If it were not for that, the lights could go out, the truth would subside. But God is promising to protect and to deliver His people. You are living in one of the most important periods of Bible times. This great nation of God's kingdom is not only going to be restored to its proper leadership, but this glory that God has placed upon you is going to shine forth with that flag when the last hammer and sickle has been struck, the last power of darkness has been forgotten. You, my friends, will know that not only is Yahweh your defense, but your strong fortress is His abiding presence. the illumination of your mind. Now, I want you, as you go out from here this afternoon, to realize that there is nothing that you can apply yourself to do. There's not a field of operation or technology or science. There's not a field of industry. There's not a field that you can apply yourself to do that if you want to know more about it, how to do it better, that He'll not give you the ideas and the vision that will make you a leader in that field and not just one that walks along satisfied with other men's revelation. We're not at the end of an age. We haven't explored the last avenues of exploration. We have an age that we're not reaching an age that no longer has a challenge. We're just on the threshold of the vastest expanse of knowledge and understanding and its use that the universe has ever witnessed in the peoples of earth. And I'm going to tell you that that challenge can be best seen by those that vibrate with its light and have determined that the earth shall first fulfill that destiny which our fathers declared, which is that His kingdom shall reign supreme from sea to sea and pole to pole, that it shall see what He Himself will finally introduce, that the white Christian nations of the world shall administer to its affairs, and the goat nations shall be governed by the sheep nations until the light of life has re-illuminated for them the course of living. So it said, but what about the darkness? Remember the words of Jesus, every plant my Father did not plant shall be plucked up. Every plant my Father did not plant shall be plucked up. Then what are you going to do with them? The Father said that He's going to see that they're well placed in an area where they'll no longer disturb you, and they're going to be suddenly immersed in a lake of Shekinah aura. Now, I can prove that to you. We don't take the time this afternoon, but you know that the enemy is going to have his darkness immersed in the light, and over a period of time there'll remain no darkness at all. For your Father has a plan so great for His universe, and through the instrumentality of you, His children, that He permitted your prophets to tell you that He's going to reconcile all things unto Himself, until every knee shall bow and every tongue shall proclaim that He is the mighty God of light forever.